enemy of my enemy makes for excellent entertainment.
This is the Blackwater Ethercast.
One always hears about the slow, even lackadaisical manner of those living in the western parts of the United States. Whether it is generally true, I cannot say, but when it comes to conducting business, the unhurried speech patterns of the captains of Texan industry belie sharp minds and decisive, even masterful leadership. Normally, as you know, I have less interest in the hunt than the kill. However, there is a certain joy in sparring with such individuals, the end result known at the outset, the negotiation real, yet mainly in the service of knowing that the other is worthy. They are themselves the American versions of barons, taking and holding power as nobles did in ages past, but created not from royal fiat, but by dint of their ability to build wealth from no more than unrecognized natural resources and the efforts of those who follow them. They exist in the uncouth and unforgiving beginnings of an empire, long before the decadence with which I, and most of you, must contend. They have my sincere admiration and envy. The gas and oil fields of Texas are, as you know, the primary destination for my travels. The Daedalus project requires a volume of fairly continuous supplies, which are far less expensively acquired here, and doing so will attract less attention from the European interests as well. The negotiations and arrangements made with surprising speed, I found myself with rather more than my allotted extra time before the voyage back. It would be possible to do a certain amount of exploring in the strange dry wilds of the American Southwest, weeks rather than a few days. The steam car would provide its service as a mobile base as designed, allowing for a secure and refined existence as we travel, as well as a location to do experiments or, as I do now, discuss the discoveries with you by way of portable ethercast. In any case, though Mr. King appears to have recovered from his abduction and drugging, I am in no hurry to return to New Orleans ahead of schedule. Unfortunately, some complications have wandered into the plans. It's not all bad news. For one thing, I am at the moment in the possession of several hundred pounds of gold, which is pleasant if unwieldy. The last part of my official business involved some simple transactions at one of the local banks. You may be thinking of an odd little building standing nearly alone on an unpaved street of clapboard facades. Corsicana may never become a major metropolis, but it is quickly building into something noteworthy. It features electric trolleys, a bustling city center, and no less than three banks to choose from. I selected one which was well-established, for such a young city, and not so much in the center of things. It was a choice both excellent and inconvenient. It was an excellent choice because of the ease and deferential professionalism with which my business was handled. It was inconvenient because, as I returned to the lobby before leaving, with a rumble and a clatter of tiles, a yard-wide hole opened up in the center of the room. Parolis gives his considered opinion regarding marriage versus virginity. It is not politic in the Commonwealth of Nature to preserve virginity. Loss of virginity is rational increase, and there was never virgin got till virginity was first lost. That you were made of is metal to make virgins. Virginity by being once lost may be 10 times found. By being ever kept is ever lost. 'Tis too cold a companion, away with't. 'Tis against the rule of nature. To speak on the part of virginity is to accuse your mothers, which is most infallible disobedience. He that hangs himself is a virgin. Virginity murders itself and should be buried in highways out of all sanctified limit as a desperate offendress against nature. Virginity breeds mites, much like a cheese, consumes itself to the very paring, and so dies with feeding his own stomach. Besides, virginity is peevish, proud, idle, made of self-love, which is the most inhibited sin in the canon. Keep it not. You cannot choose but lose by it. Out with it. Within 10 years it will make itself 10, which is a goodly increase. In the principle itself, not much the worse. Away with it. 'Tis a commodity will lose the gloss with lying. The longer kept, the less worth. Off with it while 'tis vendable. Answer the time of request. Virginity, like an old courtier, wears her cap out of fashion, richly suited but unsuitable, just like the roach and the toothpick which none wear now. Your date is better in your pie and your porridge than in your cheek, and your virginity, your old virginity, is like one of our French withered pears. It looks ill, it eats dryly. Mary, 'tis a withered pear. It was formerly better. Mary, yet 'tis a withered pear. Will you anything with it? From the dust cloud rising from the hole in the floor, a confused-looking fellow, weathered and dirt-covered, raised his head. He shook the debris from his hat, looked around with a startled expression, and quickly ducked back down again. Though muffled, a conversation followed somewhere below the floor, one voice concerned, a second angry. The second voice got angrier, and the first became conciliatory. Then the dusty head reappeared, and the man attached to it clambered into the bank lobby. The patrons and employees alike seemed entranced by the bizarre proceedings, and stood rooted to their places. It wasn't until he drew his pistol, as another man began to climb out of the hole, that they even made a sound. The first man waved the revolver uncertainly. This is a stick-up. Everyone stay where you are. At his words, everyone began moving in a panicked swirl, a couple of them very sensibly out of the building. The guard at the entryway, also suddenly able to move, drew his own gun. But the shot that thundered in the hard-walled cavern of the bank lobby was not from his. He dropped it, clutched his right shoulder, and staggered back against the wall, slumping to the ground. The witnesses cried out and suddenly froze again. The big man who had followed the first out of the hole gestured with his pistol, smoke trailing from the muzzle. Harvey said, "Hold still. I know he seems harmless and a bit slow, but he is my brother, and you will do as he says. Harvey, get that gun afore some damn fool picks it up and gets a more permanent demonstration." With some trepidation, the first man edged forward until he reached the fallen pistol and retrieved it. When he got back, he said, "Why'd you use my name, Roy? Huh? We weren't going to use no names." "If you could count, no one would have seen us at all." He punctuated his annoyance with a jab to his brother's stomach. As Harvey doubled over, Roy turned and yelled down the hole, "Clyde, get the others and get up here. What you waiting for? We gotta finish these from the front." As the patrons and employees watched or cowered, four more robbers climbed from the hole in the floor. All had evidently been digging recently. At Roy's order, the last one, Alonzo, tossed him a small bundle of dynamite sticks before leaving the hole. The onlookers reacted in alarm, but Roy merely made a face at them and said, "This ain't for you, you pampered little fools. Clyde, you and Harvey keep this herd of sheep corralled. The rest of you with me." A man tending the wounded guard called out that the guard would need a doctor, and quickly. Roy cocked his gun and pointed it at the pair of them. "Would you prefer an undertaker?" "That's what I thought. We'll be done and gone soon enough. In the meantime, the less you move or talk, the more chance you'll get to walk out, instead of be carried." With that, he holstered his gun, beckoned to the waiting trio, and stalked to the rear of the bank, ignoring the tills, obviously intent on the vault. A moment later, the employees were herded into the lobby with the rest of us. We stood or sat in silence, hoping the nervous robbers wouldn't accidentally fire their pistols. My young mechanic, River Fabrice, looked positively bored with the proceedings. McThomas had sent her along in his place, since he had some other details to attend to, and on top of having to pretend attention during the business of the bank, she now had to wait for some oddly confused robbers, able to do nothing with her hands until they were done. Perhaps she'll gain some patience from the experience, who knows. I overheard Harvey say to Clyde that they would be better off forgetting their plan and just taking the money. I was intrigued. What in the world would they be here for, if not money? Were there jewels in the vault? Enough to risk their lives for? My musing was interrupted by the four other robbers dashing out and hiding on the sides of the door. I expected an enormous blast from the direction of the vault, and mentally braced myself. Evidently, they did as well, but no blast followed. Roy ordered a very reluctant Zeke to see what was wrong. Several minutes later, Zeke returned as hastily as before, and everyone braced themselves again. No explosion. Roy, looking nearly explosive himself, stomped into the back of the bank and returned with the dynamite, failed fuse and all, and flung it as far down the tunnel below the floor as the angle and his temper allowed. The four who were not guarding the bystanders wrangled a cutting torch from somewhere below, using ropes and brute force. I began to wonder how much room there was down there, as well as where exactly their plan was taking them. I slowly moved myself to a position where I could see down the short hallway to the vault door. The robbers positioned the apparatus and stood out of the way. Mac donned a protective mask, lit the torch, and got to work on the lock plate which covered the door's small gap. However, it soon became apparent that it was not working as intended. It makes my head ache to see such inept villainy, but it was soon clear that instead of cutting the lock plate, he was melting it, welding the door shut. I turned to see Fabrice peering around me with a horrified expression. She gave me a pleading look, and I subtly nodded. At this rate, they were never going to get what they came for, and the eventual arrival of law enforcement would not necessarily ensure our safety. I sighed, stood up, raised my hands to show my harmlessness, and calmly approached Harvey, being careful not to get directly in front of his still-twitchy gun. "Sir, I surrender. I wish to become your hostage."
"I... what? But you're already..."
"No, I mean an actual hostage. I am worth a great deal of money, and far more easily gained than the other side of the vault door. Come now. Your brother will be pleased with you for solving his problem so handily."
Yeah, I guess so. Well, come with me. Clyde, you'll watch them for a minute."
As we began to move toward the back of the bank, I commented, "Roy doesn't seem overly burdened with brotherly love, I think."
"Oh, he's okay, really. Just in a bad mood. I mean, worse than usual. He didn't hit me very hard that time. I just forgot to include the distance from the saloon basement to the road, so we came up too early. Would have been fine except for that. Dig through, or if we have to, blow the bottom of the vault, and it's all easy. Bring everything back to the basement. There we go. But I messed things up again."
Now, your dedication is commendable. You're a better friend and brother than he deserves, and you may take that to the bank."
You think so, huh? Oh, to the bank. Hey, that's pretty good."
"What is it you are here for anyway, if not the money in the tills?"
"Oh, there's a shipment of gold bricks in there right now. Should be no problem once they're down in the tunnel."
"Gold bricks. Oh, no." As we arrived with the other robbers, I understood that they would never be able to get away with the gold by way of that tunnel, since it was hardly a secret now, and that the number of 28-pound ingots they could collectively carry all at once was not very large. Roy would doubtless have realized this as well, making the possibility of actually holding me for a ransom much more attractive. I would need to be certain that his problem was very thoroughly solved. Roy scowled at our approach and demanded to know what I was playing at.
"He says he wants to be our hostage for ransom."
"Actually, I believe I have a solution to their problem."
"And what do you, a dolled-up English simp, know about my problems?"
"I know that you have no way to reach the gold you came for, no way to move enough of it, and nowhere to put it."
"And you can solve all that?"
"Yes, of course. Next you'll ask me why I would. First, I cannot stand to see something being done so badly, whereas lending a hand will be entertaining. Second, I have other things to do today. And third, if you are here when the police arrive, it could well be a bad day for all of us."
"All right, Mr. Fancy Pants, how are you going to do this? Just order it to be done?"
"Yes, I will give four orders and it will be done. You have a way to get the gold out of the city?"
"Yeah, just not from away from this part of town."
He narrowed his eyes at me.
"You've done this sort of thing before, haven't you? And what do you want for all this? Half the take, I assume?"
"No, I am merely lending a hand. Two bars will cover my expenses and the nuisance of the thing. In any case, I also need to leave town soon."
"Only two? You do know how to make it easy to agree."
"Let's just say that you and I are both smarter than we look. Shall we get started?" He nodded, and I turned to Harvey. "Bring here the tall blonde girl you saw me with,
Say that I need her to be a hostage with me."
Harvey looked for approval from Roy, then ambled back to the lobby. Roy raised an eyebrow at me. I responded, "That's one." When the pair reappeared, I indicated the mangled door plate. "Fabrice, fix that." She donned her nearly omnipresent goggles, flipped down their welding lenses, and approached the project with the cheerful exasperation unique to mechanics and engineers.
"If the weld summit's all right, but that'll cut not without oxygen, you daft path. Now then, there we go, and if you don't mind me saying so, it's neither safe nor useful using things where you've no idea how."
She went on, grumbling in her nearly incomprehensible Northern Yorkshire dialect about the importance of being properly trained on equipment, made even harder to understand by the noise of the torch, and in fairly short order had cleared the accidental weld and removed the door plate. When it was done, she turned off the tinks, shoved her goggles to her forehead, and gave the robbers a look as if to say, "And that's how a professional does it." She then stalked to the other side of the room and sat on a desk. For my part, I retrieved the safe-opening mech from my coat, unfolded its spider-like legs, and placed it over the combination dial in the door. I looked at Roy and said, "3, as I flipped its activation switch. The expressions seen on those witnessing deft mechanical automatons for the first time are always enjoyable. Combined with the dawning glimmers of who and what I might be, the looks on their face were something beyond astonished. I allowed myself the sort of laugh which causes would-be heroes to pause and wonder what is about to happen to them. Less than 2 minutes later, the mech completed its task and tucked itself back into its resting state. I returned it to my coat and said, "Gentlemen, your prize." They spun the wheel to pull back the door's locking bolts and heaved the door open. The vault was empty except for some money cases to one side, locked security boxes in the back wall, and a neat stack in the center of a few dozen gold bars. I more than half expected ape-like whooping from the robbers, but the sudden sight of so much gold induces a reverential reaction in all but the lowest of the low. After a long moment, Harvey turned to Roy and said,
"So, to the tunnel?"
Roy slapped Harvey in the back of the head in a nearly automatic manner and said to me, "Obviously, we can't use the tunnel, so removing them from the basement a few of a time is out. You said you had a way to get them away from here."
"Yes. Order number 4 will be instructions to Miss Fabrice. All you need to do is to help her look like she's escaping. Send your best shot to carefully miss. It should be convincing, but you don't want any harm to come to her."
I gave Fabrice orders to relate to the rest of my people and sent her on her way with Roy, who would enlist Clyde to make it look good. A few minutes later, we heard some shouting, in particular Roy, who yelled that she was getting away. A shot rang out, and a few seconds later, Roy returned to tell us that Fabrice was out of the bank and on her way to the steam car. From the back of the bank, it sounded melodramatic and overplayed, but Roy seemed pleased with the performance and eager to get to whatever was next. I told him that the only thing left to do was to move the gold to the bank's secure side entry and hope that my people arrived well before the police did. There is nothing in the world like waiting for an uncertain outcome. Moving the bricks took the robbers only a few minutes. The next 10 felt like hours. Would the next sound be the rumble of the steam car or the klaxon of the local police? It already seemed a small miracle that they had not made their appearance. At last we felt and then heard the vehicle arrive, and opened the door to a cloud of steam and the declining whine of the engine shifting to idle. The gold bricks were quickly handed off to my crew and stowed. I made certain they understood the location and time we would meet. Then the robbers and I stepped back into the bank, Wellesley saluted and closed the steam car's door, and I closed and locked the bank's side entrance. As the engine outside rumbled into motion, I said, "Well, that went easily enough. Let's make our escape now, shall we?" Harvey pushed his hat back from his forehead and pointed at the side door.
"Why didn't we just leave with everyone else?"
"Because, you dope, we need people to think the gold is here until after we leave, so they don't get any ideas about what the trackless train car was doing. We don't want anyone to think about it too hard until we get the gold back off it."
He smacked Harvey again, knocking the smaller man's hat forward over his eyes.
"Oh,
Yes, and when I leave with you out the front door, playing hostage for ransom, it will further put the authorities off the scent. My steam car is fairly unique, and the fact that I did not leave with it suggests that we are not working together, and that there is no call to investigate its contents. Further, when you leave with a hostage, but clearly without several hundred pounds of gold in your pockets, and leaving equipment, tunnel, and closed vault behind, there should be plenty to distract everyone for some time before they notice that it is gone at all.
Oh.
But for now, we should make our exit. I preceded the robbers into the bank lobby, hands held up in the traditional sign of surrender. They followed, of course, collecting Clyde on the way to the front door. The wounded guard seemed to be doing all right, and our pursuers would be searching for robbers, not the rather more motivating murderers. Make no mistake, I knew that my association with Roy's company of thieves would have to continue until we had moved the gold well outside the Corsicana city limits. Roy was in overacting mode again, yelling threats to anyone who might think to follow us, and occasionally shoving me forward as though I were hesitant to reach the door. Once outside, we crossed the street to the deserted saloon in whose basement the robbers began their scheme, and collected their horses from where they were hitched amongst the motor cars. As we did, Harvey suddenly stopped and looked down the street.
Uh-oh.
The unmistakable sight and sound of approaching police was evident at the far end of the downtown area, local law enforcement arriving at last. If I had been an actual hostage, I would have been annoyed at their slow response time. But as it was, I heartily wished that they had been only a minute or two later. If they caught up with us, the robbers wouldn't be the only ones with the problem. My story had some holes which required actual escape to cover up, one of which was that, thanks to Alonzo's quick procurement, I had my own horse. Faster to escape, but raising far more suspicion if caught. A disagreement about which motor car had the right of way while making a turn caused a massive block in the direction we needed to ride. The drivers waved their arms at each other and angrily shouted, but made no progress toward resolving their dispute. The police drew nearer every moment. Roy's patience began to run dangerously low. He rode up to the side of one of the motor cars, pointed his revolver at the driver's head, and bellowed, "Move!" The right-of-way suddenly seemed less important to the driver, who put his car in reverse and discovered interest in an entirely new direction of travel. At last, we were able to thread our way through the momentary snarl, the sirens less than 200 yards away. As I wondered at our odds of escape, a tremendous explosion rocked the ground beneath our horses' hooves. The fuse on the dynamite, tossed into the tunnel and left, had slowly continued after all, and completed its task at last. Smoke rolled from the bank's entryway, and the roof of the tunnel collapsed, making a yard-wide trench across the entire street. The police vehicle skidded to a stop on the hard-packed clay of the street, the first car more effectively than the second, who slammed into the lead car and knocked it halfway into the trench. We rode hard and were soon out of sight, where we could slow to a walk and appear merely as a group of dusty oilfield workers, in the company of, perhaps, a somewhat overdressed businessman. I do not believe in luck, but days like today suggest how the average mind could believe otherwise.
The Blackwater Aethercast is written, produced, and performed by Nicholas Julian. Additional voices by Kayla Thomas. Beginning and ending music is by Derek and Brandon Fichter. They can be found at dbfichter.bandcamp.com. Today's entertainment was from All's Well That Ends Well by William Shakespeare. Be sure to subscribe to the Aethercast and send your friends to lordblackwater.com so they can too. Also, visit lordblackwater.com to be the featured entertainment. And thanks for listening. Harvey says hi.